reach the Outrider Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Outrider Podcast. I am Jason Quinn Malott, and this is like the seventh take of this introduction. Yeah. Anyway, so my guest today is Bonnie Zobel. She is most recently the author of What Happened Here, a novella and stories. It's out from Press 53, and you can get that at your local independent bookstore, or you can get it online. Which is to say, there's other online sources besides Amazon. Yeah. Anyway, I hope you enjoy, well, I hope you enjoy, but I think you will enjoy this conversation with Bonnie. I certainly enjoyed it. She has a great story. One of the things that really stuck out to me was her stamina and her determination. And we'll talk about that, of course, in the podcast, but I hope that as my career goes on, that if there are dry spells longer than what this one is right now, where I'm writing and working but nothing's getting noticed, that I have the stamina and the determination to stick with it the way Bonnie has, and it's paid off for her well. It's this What Happened Here is a very, very good book. You should definitely go and read it. Speaking of sticking to it and stamina and determination, I, of course, have been sending out The Palace of Winds. I've submitted that to a contest. I also have a couple of short stories that I've been polishing up, and we'll be sending those out to journals by the end of this month. So let's cross our fingers and hope for the best. And other than that, yeah, that's about it. Working, lining up some more guests for the show. But today, it's Bonnie. So let's get to my conversation with Bonnie. I think you'll enjoy it. I know I had, and I said this before, that's the problem with doing these things on the fly and doing them like seven or eight times because you screw up the recording, is that you improvise in a bad way. Anyway, Bonnie, let's talk to Bonnie. Quit talking to you. Me, us, whatever. Let's talk to Bonnie. Do you have any quick questions before we actually get started?
I'm gonna put my dogs in the house so that they don't bark during this. There they go. No, I just hope I don't say a lot or anything like that.
Don't worry. I have a problem with that from time to time as well. It's one of the problems with learning by doing. I've been doing this for about 18 months, about two episodes a month, and for some reason, every now and then, I just completely fall off the wagon, and it's like an amateur public speaker. Just, it'll be fine.
Okay. I think once I get going, I'm okay. Actually, if I'm still talking to you, I'm going to tell my husband not to let the dogs out. And then I'm all set. Okay. I should have done that. You can see here a piercing bark.
That's right. You might occasionally hear the cat over here.
Well, they're Kyle. I'm locking the dogs in the house because I'm doing a podcast thing. Okay. So don't let them out. Okay. Well, cats are quieter, aren't they?
Well, this one isn't. She's about a little 6-pound ball of demanding.
Come here, take a cookie. There's one, and there's two. Okay, now they're gone. Okay.
All right. Or I might keep in the whole bit with us corralling the dogs and talking about cats. You never know.
You never know.
Yeah, I don't do much research. And I don't really have a set of planned questions. It's just kind of all a bit of a conversation. The whole premise is I read a book that I like, or in this case, Caitlin Hamilton Sumi sent me your book, and I thought, cool.
That was nice of her. Yeah.
She was the publicist for my book when it came out, And
I really like her a lot.
she is neat, isn't she?
Yeah. And before that, I'd only I'd looked into I'm in San Diego, so I'd looked into publicists and sort of found all these New York hotshots that charged a fortune. And then I don't know if you know Kim Church.
The name sounds familiar, but
She's another client of hers and a good friend, and she recommended her, so I really have enjoyed working with her, so.
yeah, she's fun and she knows her business. That's
Yeah.
and she seems to know everybody from what I hear.
Yeah.
And when I signed with Unbridled, pretty much every the writers that I kind of ask questions to, like, what's Unbridled like? They're all like, Caitlin's wonderful. So,
Oh,
yeah.
that's cool. Yeah.
But yeah, I've been
Well,
doing
that's
this, and I
great.
asked her if she could recommend some writers to me because I'm running out of writers that I actually know. So I need if I want to keep the podcast going, I'm gonna have to talk to brand new people.
Well, I can recommend some too,
Oh,
but they
cool.
won't send, I don't know. They might even send you their book to be considered, so I'll
That would
have
be
to think
nice.
about that. Yeah. I know a guy near me that's got a great book coming out because it's coming out with Algonquin, and
Ooh.
I know this because I critiqued it for him before he was finished with it. It's a great book. I should suggest, do you mind if I suggest him, or
Oh, not at all. No problem.
what would I do? Just give him your email and
Sure, or we'll talk about it. I might have already have heard about it. My ex-girlfriend is the inventory manager at my local independent bookstore, and she just
it's
is.
Miracle, I think it's Miracle Girl
Huh.
is the name. Yeah. And he lives in San Diego too.
I'll ask Rebecca about it. Maybe she's got it on her catalog list already if it hasn't come out yet.
Maybe yeah, okay. Sounds good.
Well, let's get to you real
Okay.
quick. I always like to start with an origin story. So, where are you from originally? San Diego
I'm
or?
from California and
Oh.
I'm pretty much from San Diego. My father was in the Coast Guard, so I was born in Eureka, but he was mostly living here before then and does still.
So he was in the
And my
Coast Guard.
grandfather's from San Diego. He was one of the original oceanographers that started Scripps Institute of
Oh,
Oceanography, which is in
wow.
San Diego. So he's pretty well known, or he was. He's deceased. And so we've been here a while, which is unusual, you know,
Yeah.
because it's the kind of place where people move to.
Right, and most people, yeah, it does seem kind of that way. California kind of seems that way. It just sucks people out from the rest of the country.
I know, and I think a lot of people come out here because they want to be in rock bands.
Right.
That's how my husband ended up here from West Virginia.
Yeah? Didn't want to be an actor or anything, just wanted to be in a rock band.
He wanted to be a rock band, yeah.
Oh wow. So did you start off, I mean you have a grandfather who was an oceanographer and a father who was in the Coast Guard. Did you start off wanting to be a writer or more something, of the seafaring variety?
No, I'm not much of a scientist, and my dad's an attorney, and I don't want to go to law school. And so writing was one of the only things I felt like I was very good at. I was a pretty terrible waitress, and so I went to San Diego State as an undergraduate, and I'm older, so at the time MFAs weren't as well known. So I had to go research it, and then I just applied to a bunch and ended up going to an MFA program when there weren't as many as there are now. So,
At Columbia,
but I
correct?
did, I was I, at Columbia, but I was writing as an undergraduate too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Did you start as an undergraduate, or it's just something that you had kind of picked up in as far back as grade school, even?
Well, I always liked to write in school, and I was good at English, and I'm a voracious reader. but I didn't really start writing until I was probably 18 or 19.
Yeah, they got. I got hooked by a sixth grade teacher who had these worksheets she would hand out to us on Art Friday, is kind of our free time.
Oh,
and they would have
great
the,
idea.
Yeah, they would have like the beginnings of a story, or the middle of a story, or the end of it, and fragments of stuff, and you'd have to finish it, and then you could write your own story.
Yeah,
kind of based off.
Yeah,
of
I
what
remember.
That was all about.
That sounds fun. Well, I do remember, I think, a third grade teacher who would have us write stories, and we had to use whatever letter in the alphabet. So maybe it was earlier than third grade. I don't know. Whatever letter in the alphabet we were talking about, we had to use as many words that started with that letter as possible. And I remember loving doing that. Was pretty fun.
Right.
Sounds fun even now.
Yeah. I try to keep an arsenal of exercises handy just in case.
Yeah.
But I haven't been using them as much as I would like to. I think I'm letting myself get too distracted by the cat.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to send you a video of this guy. I know that the cat sits on his shoulder while he writes. I'll have to send that to you.
I don't know that I could concentrate with that. It's bad enough with this one. I just got her like 2 weeks ago, and she's very hyper and very playful because she's never been alone with just one other living being. Was always more dominant animals around her, so she tended to hide, which is why her owners decided she needed a calmer environment. So now she's the center of attention. And she likes to play under my desk when I'm trying to write, and there's a crossbar on the desk that she climbs on and rolls over and flops around. So when I'm writing, all I hear is, and it's like,
"That's pretty fun." We have a Maine Coon also.
Oh, yeah?
A big cat, and my dogs are very small. So the cat's like three times bigger than the dogs. But they all get along great and wrestle all over the place and groom each other and so on.
Oh, well, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this poor cat of mine used to get humped. And the dog that did it didn't care which end it was doing it to.
So. Yeah, it didn't matter. It
didn't matter.
I don't think it's about sex. It's about power.
Yeah. Yeah. That took a left turn. Anyway, so who were? I always like to know who your original influences were, what your lineage is. I always like to say that writers get to choose our own lineage, so we can. Everything is very, conscious. Who do you like? Who did you want to be like? That type of thing. Who did you study with? That I'm just let you answer.
Well, I loved Raymond Carver.
Oh, yeah.
And I did get to meet him when I was at Columbia. I'd already...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very, very few times in my life I've written can letters, and I'd written to him, and he actually remembered. And he was a really nice man, and I love his work.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one. And while I was at Columbia, I got to work with Fred Bush, who was a great teacher.
Uh-huh.
He was at Colgate. I got to work with, I'm going to have to remember these names, Tim McGrath, who was at The New Yorker at the time. Chip McGrath, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
And he's now at the New York Times Review of Books, but he was a great editor.
Oh, wow.
Which was really helpful. I think people that I work with who are able to get into people's writings and not try to make it all a certain way, but try to help you do what you're doing.
Right, exactly.
Are the best.
Yeah.
Steve Almon has been a great editor for me and is also very generous and nice. And, I don't know. I just, I even think books that I love to read,
uh-huh.
are good teachers too. I think they teach me a lot. And sometimes that's more helpful even than talking about craft.
Yeah. So who were your writers? Who were the ones you would want to have on a desert island? Who their books anyway?
On a desert island?
I mean
Yeah.
Some of the writers themselves you might want to just kick off the island, but their books were good. Who were those guys? Or gals?
Aside from who I've already said, well, if he was still alive, I guess, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, I love his work. Gina Frangelo, I like hers, and Pam Houston, and Toni Morrison.
Oh, yeah.
Dan Cheon, is that how you say his last name? Cheon?
Shon Chon? Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe you're right.
I think...
you're probably. I just read these things and I don't know how to pronounce them. So.
One of the handicaps of being a writer is
Yeah. William Trevor, I like his writing a lot. And I could go on.
Oh yeah. I'm always interested in that because my parents always bought me books when I was a kid, and I really didn't start reading seriously until junior high and high school. I just had the books around the room. I was read to a lot when I was a kid, but that stretch of that young adolescence, you know, right before puberty, I thought I was going to be a football player, so I was just reading comic books. And I feel like I'm always kind of behind everybody else. And I didn't
I know
read
when
children's
those lists...
books.
No?
Mm-mm.
I like children's books. Like I read all the Nancy Drew books and Mrs. Piggle Wiggle, I think it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I always like to read. So, you know.
But you had started off on something else before I popped off about the children's books, and I'm trying to backtrack for a second.
Okay.
Oh, whatever. So when you, who did you, who was it that you really, well, who was in, okay. Let me get my brain in gear here for a second, because that distracted me. Who were some of your classmates when you were at Columbia? Did anyone go on to a?
Yeah, some people went on and made good. Mona Simpson.
Oh wow!
And Lionel Shriver, and who else? Those are the two that come to mind the most. But plenty of others have published work and done well. Those are the two big names that stick out. So,
yeah, Columbia's got quite a bit of a tradition, so that's
yeah.
Nice.
You know, some people love it and some people hate it, but for me, it was pretty exciting because, as I told them when they first called me to say I was in, I said, "Oh, I can't go there. I've never been east of Utah," and So, but, and I did that twice and then I ended up going there. And so it was really exciting to me just because I hadn't really ever experienced the East Coast.
Right.
As well as enjoying, I did enjoy the school. It was, I liked it, but it was a big program. So there was always someone you could talk to, and programs tend to be competitive. So there was always someone you were getting along with, and some of these very small programs, I think it would be difficult.
Right.
But different people are looking for different things. So I know some people thought that there was too many people in it and left. You just have to find your niche, I guess. But I thoroughly enjoyed going there. Yeah. So made some good friends and so on.
And, you know, you had New York around you. So... that'd be cool.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting too. Yeah, I ended up working afterward at Cosmopolitan Magazine.
Oh wow.
Which was kind of fun. I know people tend to think if you work there, you just kind of lie around on desks and then button all the buttons on your gloves. But it was actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
And Helen Gurley Brown was still alive, and she was hands-on there, so I met her.
Oh, wow.
And that was fun, and I worked for an agent for a while. So those kind of things really were wonderful experiences to have, because you can't do those things in San Diego. So
right, right.
I'm glad I did it.
I don't mean to try to date you, but that would have been the early 80s then?
Yeah, 70s? That's when it was. Yeah, early wow. 80s is exactly when it was. And I'm just about to turn 60. So,
no.
Yes. So, you know, I don't even know how old I was, but I was young. But I didn't go immediately to college, so I wasn't, you know, a newborn or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those experiences were great.
Wow, that must have been something.
Yeah.
How sketchy was New York in the early 80s? My sister lives there now, and you know, it's, you know,
yeah.
Times Square is pretty safe, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't as safe when I was there. I have to say the subways were really scary.
Uh-huh.
And I think since I've gone back a few times, it's much better now. I don't know. Well, they cleaned up all the graffiti. Don't they have paint now that you can't graffiti on?
I think so, yeah.
And I just don't think you're taking your life into your hands quite as much. Especially when I lived out in Brooklyn part of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got scared, but maybe I'm more fearful than others. But I think it's just a lot of it's cleaned up now.
Yeah.
I lived on the Upper West Side before they redid that, and then I lived in Park Slope when it was pretty sketchy, although now I hear
it's all quite, hipster.
Yeah, it's, or Little Manhattan, they call it, or something. It's much, much ritzier than when I was there. So, but I've been back there. It's lovely. But when you're a graduate student, you can't afford to live in very high class places. So, yeah, doormen. People had doormen, and like in San Diego, you're kind of like doormen. You know? Whoever heard of that?
I know.
And I was from a beach town, so when I first moved there, I unfortunately didn't get a Columbia apartment, but I got into a graduate dorm, and I'd already been out of the house for quite a while, so I wasn't very happy. But it ended up good that I landed there, because I do remember the first day I walked out of the dorm. I was from a beach town in San Diego. I went out barefoot.
Oh no!
And the doorman said, "Put your shoes on." And boy, was he right!
Yeah.
He was very right about that. So. Very, very big culture shock.
Uh-huh. So, wow. Are you a big music fan? Because that would have been a freaking wonderful time to have been, like, you know, at CBGB's and all this stuff that's like legend.
I did go to CBGB's. Yeah, that was very fun, too. It was still going on then. And there was a lot of places that, small places playing the blues, but I think there still are,
mm-hmm.
but not those big places like CBGB.
Not the legendary places.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. So those were there. And
so who did you get to see?
What did I get to see?
Yeah.
Or who?
Who, yeah.
I'm not a music expert, so I can't tell you. I loved, what I really loved when I was there was the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And even as a student, I would stand a lot in the twofer line and just go by myself. I really loved going to the theater there, but you're going to ask me what I saw, and I'd have to sit back and think for a while. But I just love going when I'm there.
Have you written for the stage? Do you ever write for the stage?
Not really. I had one story that I made into a one-act play that was acted out here in San Diego at Sushi Gallery,
oh wow,
which at one time was a big place. I don't know if they're still around or not, actually, because I'm not really involved in the theater. Mm-hmm. I'm just mostly I'm a fiction writer.
And so far, it's mostly been short fiction, right? Because the bio says you're working on your first novel, correct?
We call it a first novel because I haven't had one published yet. I have written them, and I'm going back to one right now that I wrote before. So I've written all kinds of fiction, actually. I write Flash. Uh-huh. I'm working on a novel, and I've worked on them. And then the opening story and what happened here is a novella, kind of halfway mark, and so on.
Right. So, okay, so you get out of graduate school. You end up at Cosmopolitan for a while.
Well, I went to Columbia first.
Right.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's fine. I mean, you went to graduate school at Columbia, and then you got out of that and worked at Cosmo, correct?
Right.
Right. What'd you do after that?
I worked at Cosmo, I don't know if it was maybe for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up moving back here. I came out here visiting because my family's here, and I went to visit a community college here where I teach now, and talked to them, and I ended up moving back here because I liked being there, but it's really expensive to live there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you really wanted to be an editor, I think what people do, I had a friend back then that, like me, was an editorial assistant, and she's really become a big name in magazines, and what you do is you go from one magazine to another and try to get higher and higher on the masthead, and she right. did that. But if you really want to do that, that's, what is it, a 60-hour week or something
wow.
like that?
Right.
Which doesn't leave much time for writing. And as an editorial assistant at Cosmopolitan, I didn't even make enough to support myself.
Wow.
So
yeah.
I had, you know, they have like rich girls that went to expensive schools whose parents are supporting them get those jobs.
Right.
And I wasn't one of those girls.
Right.
So I had to do freelance editing and so on to help support myself. So again, you're running out of writing time.
Exactly.
And it's easier to live in San Diego. But, of course, that might be me because I'm from San Diego. But it just didn't entail having so many jobs.
Wow.
And so I ended up moving back here because I wanted to write more. And I got the job at the community college, which I still have today.
Wow.
So that was my trajectory. What do you do?
Well, I have the horrible, horrible day job where it's I look at technical manuals all day and edit them.
yeah, I have friends that do that.
And I can't stand it, but that's okay. It pays the bills and it affords me, you know, the enough time to write.
But that's good. That's the important thing.
I'd rather be someplace that has a slightly livelier literary community. Than
what city do you live in?
Wichita, Kansas.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I don't know anything about Wichita.
Oh.
It was like that in San Diego when
right.
I finished undergraduate, and there was just nothing going on
right.
here. So that's built up some. We have a lot more going on. But I still love in the summer going to various conferences and residencies and getting to talk to more writers.
Yep. I need to do that. That's what my people have always been telling me. And every time I think I'm going to plan to do that and try to get stuff organized.
Yeah.
Like my car breaks down and all that money I was saving up to do it has to go fix the car so that I can keep going to the job. Right.
Well, there's some workshops in the Midwest too that maybe wouldn't be. It's a lot cheaper if you live near it.
Yeah, there's just not much near here. There's stuff out in Colorado that would be good. But that's where I did my MFA was in Boulder at Naropa University. So
Did you like that?
I loved it. I miss it
Yeah, me
tremendously, but
too.
Boulder's horribly expensive.
Oh, it is. Well, San Diego is too, but you figure out a way.
Now,
I know
was.
people at my. Go ahead. You
Oh,
go
no.
ahead.
You know people. Go. I was going to ask about the whack job girls, but you know
Good.
people.
What?
I said, but you know people. I'll let you ramble
Well,
for
I
a
just
while.
was going to say, you might not even. I was just going to say, I know people at work where I teach who plan on retiring somewhere other than San Diego because it's expensive here. But since my family's here, I'll probably stick around. I'm
Yeah.
just, it's my city, so.
I would love to get out of Kansas.
Yeah.
If I wait too long, there won't be any roads out. They'll all have deteriorated.
Oh.
Now, okay, so the whack job girls, was that your first book? I mean, 'cause you'd
Yeah,
obviously
that's
done
an
a lot of short
interesting
stories before.
story. Yeah. What I'd done is I wrote a lot of, I wrote about three novels when I was out of graduate school. And I wasn't getting anywhere with them, so I went back to short story writing and I learned how to write flash fiction on Zotrope Virtual Studio, where I made a lot of online friends. And I also had longer stories, so I had both of those manuscripts at one point. And what happened after all those years is they both got accepted in the same month of the same year. It was kind of funny. I know I could have used one earlier, but I think it was it October 2013 or something. So I, the chapbook was accepted a few weeks earlier, and then what happened here, the full collection was accepted the same month. And what Kevin Morgan Stanley at Press 53 said to me was, I want to wait a year to publish this one because you're going to have the chapbook coming out. And I think some writers might have been disappointed, but I was so relieved
Oh
because
no, that's
a lot
perfect.
of work goes into promoting books, as you know, and I didn't know the first thing about it. So I was very happy that it turned out that way. Yeah, so The Whack Job Girls came out first, and then a year later, What Happened Here came out. And The Whack Job Girls is pretty much all flash. It is all flash fiction.
Oh, cool.
And What Happened Here has a couple of flash fictions in it, but then it has a novella and some long stories too.
Yeah, so I was, what did I do with you? I move stuff around on my desk while I'm talking, and then I look for it and I can't find
That sounds familiar.
So, when did you get your first story published? The very first story.
Oh boy. In my 20s, I did publish stories over the years. And I think it was in some strange anthology.
Right.
And it was a story that intentionally had racial issues in it. So this wasn't a good first experience. And so there was a kid in it nicknamed Whitey, and they before they didn't ask me, they just changed his name to Whitney, and they did some strange things like that. But it was still exciting getting a first story published.
So that's quite a long stretch between your 20s and then 2013 before an actual book comes out. Wow.
I know. I agree.
That
Way
was
too long.
that had to
It
have been discouraging. I mean,
was very discouraging, and I did stop a few times. I'm just not going to write anymore. But then something good would happen. and I'd be encouraged again. One time right in the middle there, I got a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship.
Oh, right, yeah.
Then I started writing again. But it's hard to go that long and not get a book out.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it feels better now to have two out after.
Yeah.
Because it is hard, you know.
It's hard. Have you ever had an agent? Did you ever manage that, or do you have one now?
Well, you don't really need one for a collection.
Right, right.
I did have one for each of the novels I wrote, but it just none of them got picked up. So.
Huh.
There's a couple I'm going to go back to.
Right.
Now, because you know how you feel like after more years go by, you've gotten to be a better writer, and
mm-hmm.
I have ideas about making them stronger, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah, a little extra life wisdom to throw at it.
Yeah. And one of them even won a novel award, and I still
cool.
couldn't get it published.
Oh,
yeah,
good grief.
Yeah, it was back in the award. I know. It was, what is
oh,
it
that
called
has
it
to
me? I know.
Frustrating.
Wait, yeah.
Did you ever hear about those experiments that a well-established, you know, award-winning writer would do with one of his students,
yeah.
you know, where they would swap out the names of the author on it and try to submit it to publishing houses again? It would get
right.
rejected, and it had been like a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so subjective. It's not surprising.
Oh, it's, yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, I hope something happens with the novel you're working on. That would be nice.
Yeah, I do too.
Break the cycle, but you know.
Yeah, I figure things are going better now, so maybe I'll have a better chance.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
Yeah.
So, do you talk about books when you're working on them, or do you wait until they're finished?
Oh, no, I don't mind talking about them.
Because I have a little superstitious thing. I mean, unless I've finished a draft, I don't like to tell the story before I've written it. You know, that type of...
Well, I have finished a draft, but it does remind me, I've gone to residencies where there are two breakfast tables. There's the breakfast table for the people that do like to talk, and the breakfast table for the that don't like to talk. Because they don't want it to interfere with their thought process about
right.
They don't want to talk about the book. But I usually actually don't mind. In fact, sometimes it helps me figure it out. So I don't mind.
Oh, so what's the one that you're working on now? What's it about?
That one's called Animal Voices. And it's based, well, there are two main characters that start out as kids in Del Mar, an area in San Diego. The girl can communicate with animals, so there's some
oh, wow.
magical realism there.
Uh-huh.
And the boy winds up being HIV positive, and it's set in the 70s. So it's back when people were first getting AIDS.
Right.
And somehow through her communication process, I mean, it's a lot more complicated story, she's able to communicate with him better, even though he kind of shuts down.
Huh.
He's Catholic, and he's from kind of a redneck background that wouldn't accept that kind of thing.
Right.
And she's sort of able to connect with him better than maybe his family could. And lots of animals in it. So...
That sounds very exciting.
Yeah. Thanks.
I don't know if this would bother you, but there was something. There were a couple of things that popped into mind. I could see where the Marquez influence comes in with the interest to do magical realism. You know, that's,
yeah, I love this stuff. Yeah.
But have you ever read anything by John Berger? He's a British writer. He had the book. That was taken from a BBC series called Ways of Seeing, and he won the Booker Prize for G in 1971.
No, I don't know. I know his name, but I haven't read him.
He has this beautiful, beautiful book that's one of my desert island books that I would take with me wherever I go. It's called To the Wedding. And it sort of has a semi-magical realism aspect to it in that it's told by a blind man is the narrator, and he hears it's all story that he relates, you know, that he hears it. So he's able to hear across tremendous distances. So he hears this story unfolding about a woman who had contracted AIDS from a one-night stand, and the young man who's fallen in love with her and is going to marry her anyway.
Wow.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book. But that's what your story reminded me of. So I would like to read yours, too, very much.
Well, I'd like you to, too. I hope something good comes from it. So, yeah, I think it's a good story. And, yeah, there's lots of complications in there. And she never gets AIDS. So.
Yep. Oh, cool. So do you have... Now, the ones that you had the agents for and have kind of been relegated to the drawer for a while, what do you have? Do you have a timetable or a plan for those? Or,
well, I just went back to the one that I liked the most, and it's the one that won the award. So I had gotten a little encouragement on it, and I don't give myself deadlines or anything because I work as much as I can.
Right.
And I'm not someone that needs more pressure. I'm someone that needs to relax more. So I don't do that. But, I hope, you know, it always seems, oh, I'm going to rewrite this book. It won't take long, but it'll probably take a while.
Yeah.
And I need to do a lot of cutting is one thing I need to do. So, and then when I'm done with that, there's another one I'm going to go back to and decide whether I like it enough to rework it or if I should start a different one or what. I'll just decide that when the time comes. this one, you know, it's been 10 years since I worked on it.
Wow.
So it's really nice to go back and realize how much better you can make it.
Uh-huh.
I still like the story. But tightening the language has been pretty easy.
Mm.
And I do think that's from spending some time writing flash fiction.
Oh, yeah.
And helping, you know, to compress things. I don't know if you ever write flash.
I struggled with short stories. I mean, the short story is the medium of the writing workshop. And
right.
And so I did used to write a lot of short stories.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always my consistent flaw with all of my short fiction, excuse me, was that there was always more story there.
Yeah.
And I was never able to, and it didn't matter how tight my language was. My language is always kind of spare to begin with. I'm not very florid, and you know, my revision process often includes adding material more than than cutting stuff.
Well, then we're complete opposites. Then I always write way too much and then kind of have to sculpt the story out of it.
Right.
That seems to be the way I do it. But whatever works, you know?
Yeah. And even with that spareness, I would tend to have these stories where the people in class would go, there's more here, isn't there?
I'd be like,
yeah, you know, and I mean, my first novel started off as just an experimental short story. I wanted to tell one event from the point of view of the two people, you know, one half of the story would be from the woman's point of view, the other half would be from the man's point of view, and it would just be about this one incident. And
right.
You know, everybody in class came back to me and says, you've got a bigger, bigger story here. And I was like, okay. So I went and I continued to kind of flesh out the thing. And next thing I know, I had 60,000 words, you know?
Wow.
And
well, that's good.
Yeah. So I do need to get back into short fiction. I think it would be a good way to keep myself feeling a little bit less lethargic and take some of the pressure off. Do you have a problem
Yeah.
with patience, or are you pretty patient about, the long stretch between, finishing the story and landing it somewhere? And
Are we talking about stories or novels? Stories too?
yeah, everything. Patience with anything. I mean, how do you, because you've had this big long, like you said, there was, you had your first story published when you were in your 20s, but Whack Job Girls hit in 2013. That's a long stretch to be, and two novels with two different agents that never landed anywhere. And I would be pulling my hair out. I would be kicking myself, in the, and saying, "Oh, you're worthless and horrible, and write harder, write harder." Because I'm kind of wondering how you deal with patience, or with that, or the patience game, this ability to wait.
I have some hard times in there. I won't lie. Where I just, why bother? I'm just not going to write anymore. But then something good would happen, or I'd be inspired and I'd go back to it. The novels took me a long time. And so that was pretty frustrating. Stories take me a long time too. I'm not a very fast writer. Flash is much more fun because you can finish those faster. But there's then they're not. And I love Flash, but I like writing longer things too. Might be more satisfying. So I guess I'm patient, but I lose it once in a while,
Yeah. It's okay. Let me regather here for just a second.
Sorry about that.
No, 'cause I was heading somewhere with the patience
Novels and patience,
and that, because that's, it's one of the things that I always kind of have the hardest time dealing with is that long lag time. I mean, it takes me about 3 years to write a decent draft, and
of a story or a book.
of a novel, and it's been 6 years now since the first novel came out, and it's like, and the hardest part is the query letters and the on all this other stuff, and horrible. And I find I s
I know.
put my I put a lot of pressure on myself to perform, and that kind of leads to a certain level of burnout. And I was hoping you would have some words of wisdom for me and others like us about that, the patience game, and having the determination to stick to it for that long stretch. That's admirable. I
Well,
find that
you know what?
tremendously encouraging.
Well, as I say, I certainly wasn't patient the whole time, but I always got back to it. One of the things that I find the hardest now that I've published these two books is how much the writer has to promote them.
Oh, yeah.
I'm impatient a little bit with that, is that I just would love to pour myself wholeheartedly into this novel and sort of turn off social media and so on and so on. But it's not like the old, or what we read about the old days, I guess, where the publishing company did all the promotion. That's not true of commercial publishers either. I know people there who do all the promoting themselves as well. It's just really time consuming. As you know, I guess, and trying to get you just want people to read your book,
And if you're like me, you're not very graceful at the at self-promotion. My publisher, well, one of my publishers, Fred Ramey, used to get f still occasionally gets frustrated with me, because he'll catch me in conversation sometimes saying, "Oh, all of Unbridled's list is really strong except for this one book." And he just, "You quit, stop it."
How do I know his name? Fred Ramey?
Caitlin, probably. And of course, he's one half of Unbridled Books, which is in Colorado.
Okay.
He's, I think he's also on the advisory board for Zank Books. But he's been around and all over. He used to be with Blue Hen Press, which was a Penguin imprint for a while, and helped get McMurray and Beck off the ground, which became McAdam Cage. So yeah,
that's a great place.
He's been around for a while.
Yeah.
So okay, so you in 1 year you sold 2 books.
Right.
The Whack Job Girls to Monkey Puzzle Press, a small indie
also
press.
Also was in Colorado until recently. They moved to Arkansas.
In fact, I think that one of the guys that started that is a fellow Naropa grad with who was there a couple of years after I was.
So, Nate Jordan?
Yep, I think so.
Yeah, that was my editor there.
And, he also did a book by another guy I know, Dale Bridges, Justice Incorporated, which came out last year as well.
I've heard of that one.
With Monkey Puzzle. So they do a good work. And, of course, they're with Small Press Distribution, who does the whole thing like that. So that's good, because that's important, the SPD stuff.
Yeah, I think they've done some very good books, and they did Meg Tweet's book to it. I always say that wrong. And then a couple of other friends of mine had their books picked up, and I think they've started having, I think, chapbook contests. So I think he's doing a lot of good things. I hope he continues.
Me too. It's always good to hear stuff like that. And then, of course, what happened here with Press 53, which does just short story collections, right?
Right. They do poetry collections as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, of course, these stories are all centered around, what is it, North Park? Is that correct? San Diego? And and touch on that, what is it, 1970-something airline crash? And that's a true story, right?
That is a true story. PSA, and it was 1978. And I actually live in a house that is yards from where it happened.
That's what I wanted to know.
Right. I mean, it was a huge event in San Diego. So when it happened, I lived in San Diego, and I did live in North Park, but not right here. I was a college student and lived on the other side of town. But it just so happened that later in life, the house I bought, it's small, it's a Spanish bungalow type thing. It's right in front of where that accident happened.
Wow.
So I became increasingly interested in it and ended up writing about it. So
you were in San Diego when that happened. That's...
Yes, I was an undergraduate.
Wow.
It was pretty shocking. I remember driving to school in the morning, and I was coming out of my apartment, and the sky was just filled with black smoke. And then I turned my radio on and found out what happened. But it's pretty shocking, an airplane just dropping on a city, you know?
I kind of like how, I think the way the collection was sequenced did a really nice job of planting that tragedy as kind of this base note for the rest of the stories. Because it was one of the classes we had to take, didn't have to take, but one of our options was sequencing for story collections and magazines, which is really in itself kind of an art form, how to put a collection together so that people keep reading.
I think it's a fascinating topic how do you put them together? And I've actually written some articles. I've done a lot of writing for Flash Fiction Chronicles. I did a whole series on, how to put them together, and then editors of chapbooks telling what they're looking for. And I just think it's fascinating the different ways people talk about how to put them together. I had one friend, Kathy Fish, is a well-known flash writer, who says she puts them around the edges of a dining room table and sort of keeps walking around and walking around and then moves them. I don't know, but it's hard to figure out. A deep, dark secret, though, about that collection is they weren't written to be linked.
Right.
They were written over a span of like 30 years, and I linked them later.
Mm-hmm.
They were set in a lot of different cities.
Oh, wow.
But then the last thing I wrote was the novella that has the most to do with the plane crash that kind of brings it all together, even though it's at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of introduces things.
So what and was then the first... more I... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, boy. I don't know what the first story I wrote was. I wrote Nimbus Cumulus a long time ago. That's the one I got the NEA for. It was about the guy that had AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them are from 30 years ago. But I just got more and more into the whole North Park thing and the plane crash. And then I had a brainstorm about moving all the stories into the same block.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of did work out. It was fine. And they all had their own stories, like different mm-hmm. people in neighborhoods do. But, and it's not, certainly the whole book isn't about the crash, but it affected different people in different ways. Like there's the surfer kid who wishes it would happen again so that he wouldn't have to live in North Park anymore because mm-hmm. he's tired of living with his parents. And it just affected different characters in different ways. So those parts were all added, how it affected them.
Right.
But the stories already existed. So I just put them, I drew a map about where they all lived, and that's kind of how that happened. It was fun.
Yeah.
Because I liked all the stories, but I liked linked stories anyway. It's fun to see characters in other stories that you got to read from their perspective. And then it just sort of has a feeling of bringing it all together. So I just figured out how to do that. But it was kind of a lot of fun doing that once I figured out I was going to do that.
Right. It kind of harkens back to the Grand Hotel novel, you know, which is just these series of stories, you know, that don't appear to be touching, but somehow by the end of it, they all wrap up and link together, kind of like what they did with that movie Shortcuts, which was taken from a bunch of Raymond Carver stories.
Oh, I loved that movie. Yeah.
You know, because those stories weren't linked like that before.
No.
And then they did a really nice, and that's kind of the Grand Hotel model that one of my instructors used to always talk about. And those are fascinating. Those.
Yeah. And then what's the name of the Sherman, not Sherman. Oh, I'm going to forget. I should drop it because I won't remember. But there's that mean book. It's a collection of people in the same area. And I'm going to forget his name. It's the mean book like this.
Mm.
Darn it. Oh, well. Go ahead.
Yeah, I
can look it up on my computer, but I won't find Sherwood Anderson's.
Oh, Our Town. No.
I'm looking on my computer now.
This is
it's set all in one place too. So he was kind of a big influence on me. Ones that I like. Go ahead.
There'll be someone listening to this podcast as we're searching going, it's this! It's this!
I know. Well, other ones I like are, like, Trailer Park was a Russell Banks collection where everybody lived in the trailer park.
Uh-huh.
That was a great one. And I also really love Olive Kittredge. Did you read that collection?
It's no, a great I didn't.
Collection where they're all connected. Here, I just found it's the one I'm thinking of is Sherwood Anderson. The name of the book is Winesburg, Ohio.
Oh, right, right.
Which a lot of people attribute to their inspiration of writing connected stories, and his is connected by place like mine is. So I love that. I think they're called. It's called A Town of Grotesques because they all have sort of weird problems and issues. But that's a great book.
Yeah. Know. Yeah, Kerouac kind of wanted to do something like that. He wanted all of his novels to have all of the character names be matched up, and so that they were uniform, but he never got around to it, and nobody wanted to let him do it when he was alive.
Yeah.
He wanted this great big legend, you know, to be stuck out there, and it didn't quite work. And so now you can actually find, I don't remember where it is, you can actually get a chart where it lists the real people, you know, Kerouac and Ginsberg and Burroughs and whatever, and then it goes across in the chart and tells you which character they were in each book.
Wow, that sounds real pretty interesting. If you were, especially if you were kind of familiar with all the characters.
Yep.
That sounds fascinating. So, what's the name of your book?
Oh, it's called The Evolution of Shadows.
I have to look that one up.
It was.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's. It's about a woman who leaves her husband and goes to Bosnia to search for her missing ex-lover.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. I'll have to read that one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I panicked when I finished the rough draft because I'd finished the rough draft. I was celebrating, and my good friend Laura, who I befriended in grad school, but because she was too good of a writer to make my enemy.
That's a good one.
And we were watching TV, and this movie promo comes on for the movie Harrison's Flowers.
Don't know that one.
Which starred Andy McDowell and I can't remember the guy's name. But
yeah,
her husband is a photojournalist who goes missing in Croatia, and she goes looking for him. And I thought, no!
I know, I've had that thought before. But then by the time you finish your book, it's so long ago that it kind of doesn't matter. But that sounds like a fascinating premise. Did you already know about Bosnia or did you research it?
Oh, I'd been obsessed with Bosnia since 95, right about the time when the war was wrapping up. Because all the news media in America was saying, oh, it's just this confusing, you know, civil war and we should just not get involved. And I thought, that doesn't sound right. And I started reading about it, and I got more and more appalled at the whole thing and couldn't stop thinking about it.
That sounds really interesting. I'll have to order it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
So you've got the novel that you're going back to. Is there anything on the horizon that you're excited about? Any projects that... you can hint at.
You mean
at.
Writing projects?
Yes.
Or do you mean things that I'm going to be doing?
Both.
I'm really excited about a panel I'm going to be on at AWP.
Oh, cool.
It's called, if I can remember what the name of it is. Women Writers of the American West, Readings and Definitions. And it has Pam Houston's going to be on it, and Tamara Lintz, Kathy Fish, and Paisley R. I can't remember her last name. But the reason we're going to do a little reading, but we're also going to define the American West is because when we were putting it together, we realized we had such different ideas of what the West meant.
Oh, wow.
And that became a really interesting part of it. So... We each are going to give like a one sentence definition of what we think the West is. So I'm really looking forward to that. It seems kind of fun. And I'm hoping to go to some writing conferences this summer. You know, the novel stretches out in front of me, so I don't think that that's my main goal right now. I'd like to go back to the other previous novel. That's called Bearded Women.
Bearded Women?
Yes, one of the characters is an electrologist, which I think is funny. And that, for some reason, gives me a kick. But, yeah, that was a lot of fun to write, too. But I'm not going to look at that until I'm done with this one and decide whether I think it's still worthy of being rewritten. Because it's always hard to decide. I don't know if you have this problem, whether it's better to go back and rewrite things that you kind of like but that didn't quite do it, or if it's better to go forward because you're probably a better writer now and might come up with something better. Do you struggle with that?
Yeah, but I'm also struggling with stagnation, and it's kind of it right now. It's appealing to me as an easier way to get something accomplished by going back and picking up an old story. And yeah. Seeing if I can polish it up and send it out somewhere, because because these days starting off from scratch, I find myself getting a lot more easily distracted.
Mm-hmm.
It used to take me a year to write a rough draft.
Yeah,
and now I've started three rough drafts in the last year and haven't finished any of them.
Of stories or of novels?
Of novels.
And yeah.
I just, in the last 2 weeks, started a short story. I'm experimenting and farting around with crime fiction.
I love crime.
Yeah. Next Monday, I have my conversation with Scott Phillips coming out. Wrote The Ice Harvest, and he's from Wichita here, and we got to know each other when I worked for the independent bookstore, Watermark Books, here in town. So I finally sat down and talked to him, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna try my hand at crime fiction. I didn't want to mess with it before, but I'm gonna give it a shot. Mm-hmm. He gave me some ideas and recommended some books to me, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I guess at some point you just have to decide, okay, which one interests me the most, and I'm going to work on that. But it sounds like this interests you the most, so it's probably the best direction.
Yeah, I also have to avoid the discouragement and you know, the internet.
Yeah, there's that, yeah. Sometimes workshops that just you and people in town work because they kind of give you some deadlines to get some stuff done, too. A friend of mine and I a while back developed one of those, and it went for some years, and it was good for kind of getting me to get stuff done, too.
Yeah. I've been doing a writer's salon once a month.
That sounds good, yeah.
Just to try and build out a community. And that's been going on for about a year now. Just to get other people out, other writers, get them talking to each other at least once a month, because Wichita has a weird kind of cliquish mentality. It's strange. Everybody's very protective of their own little kingdom. And they don't, you know, there's kind of this arm's length, oh, you're not part of my group, you're suspicious. I haven't quite been able to figure that out.
Sounds like you need to write a story or a novel about Wichita.
Yeah,
place always fascinates me in novels. I love to know what different places are like what it would be like to live there.
Yeah. I've never been a big place person though. I think been. We'll see how that goes, because the whole crime thing I'm gonna try and wedge my way into Scott Phillips territory and write, you know, Wichita noir. I probably mispronounced that word.
No, I think that's how you say it.
My ex-girlfriend would probably argue with both of us on that one. That's
Probably, yeah.
after 8 years, that really got me paranoid. Was did I say that right? She took French and can speak French, and if you don't get the French
Yeah.
words right, she's going to mock me.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why she's your ex. That's what happens with
That's the way it
exes.
goes, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Bonnie, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me here. Good luck with this book.
Well, thank you.
It's very,
I
very
appreciate
good.
all your, yeah, I it's fun talking to you, and you've made me very curious about your book, so I'll have to go
Oh,
read
cool.
it. I'll let you know. Yeah.
Don't go anywhere just yet.
Don't go anywhere.
All right, there you have it. My conversation with Bonnie Zobel. It was very cool. Drop me a note or if you want, or rate and review the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And drop back by in 2 weeks. I'll talk with Greg Michelson. He's the other half of Unbridled Books. It's a very, very fun conversation. Yay! And I think you'll understand after my conversation with him why he and Fred do such good work. See you in a couple weeks. Bye.